irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Max and friends, he says what he wants, ain't holding nothing back, back, got the
Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. Welcome to Max and Friends. Well, it's just a beautiful moment wherever you are right now. I feel your beauty. I feel your love. I feel your being. I feel your essence. I feel your vibrations. I feel you all because we're having a wonderful show tonight. Tweet me at Max Tucci. And we're going to have some Q&A because we have a wonderful guest here tonight. Back, should I say, by popular demand, but back because there is so much going on in this world right now, and our lives are big, so we have to keep reaching. And I think it's beautiful when our lives intertwine with someone else. I love to say a lover. As people say partners, or not, and partners to me is just so like business or games or tennis, but a lover and in relationships. Tell me about your relationships, people, because I want to know. Our beautiful guest who's joining us again tonight in just a moment is Shakti Durga. Live, she will be from Australia. And there's a new book which I received in the mail from Shakti Durga called Empowering Relationships. It's quite beautiful because there's so much to talk about in this fabulous book. We're going to talk about it tonight in just a moment. Now, Shakti Durga is the founder and spiritual head and inspirational leader of Shanti Mission, Peace Mission, which is head office based in Australia. Shakti Durga is a living guru. Her teachings focus on the development of spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical health and well-being with the goal of igniting the divine spark and cultivating the guru within everyone. Do you believe that there's a guru within you, my listeners? I'm here to tell you there is. You know, I love this saying, when I searched for God, I found myself. But I know that life is a beautiful thing, and where we are right now is exactly where we're supposed to be. And if you're tuning in for the first time to Max and Friends here on LA Talk Radio, I welcome you, I say namaste, I bow to you, and I thank you, because it's listeners like you that make my show continue to grow. We're going on our 7th year this year with Max and Friends, and I'm just so excited to be able to give you guests like Shakti Durga, and of course, Joan Collins was here not too long ago, and our friends Eva LaRue and Lisa Lampanelli, and just so many wonderful people who, Barbara Taylor Bradford, who come and share their stories, their lives, their moments of being, their relationship with us. Speaking of relationships, I would love for you all to go right now online and get this fabulous book called Empowering Relationships. I can't speak right now. Empowering Relationships. I just had a Barbara Walters moment. But nonetheless, Shakti Durga is going to join us, and we're going to get into this book because we're going to get into really empowering relationships. And what I love and love, love, love is to find this potential that's inside all of us. It's there. And we can be empowered peacemakers. Do you believe that? You know, I was just last week, during all of this stuff going on in Je Suis Charlie in Paris, there was a moment when across, not too far, but in India, there were 2,000 flute players, and they were all there for peace. And what the beautiful thing is that while this peace was in the air, this essence of love and joy and peace was in the air, no media covered it, which I thought was so bizarre. And everyone focused on the Charlie situation, which I understand, you know, is a big news story. But there is peace and love happening in this world. We need to start focusing on that, because I think that's how we become empowered peacemakers. We're going to ask Shakti Durga when she joins us in a moment. But really, I think that when we focus on peace, it manifests. Go to shantimission.org. And there you can find all the books from our wonderful guests in just a moment. We're going to play some beautiful music right now that was sent to us from the beautiful, beautiful, beautiful Shanti Mission in Australia. And when we're back, we're going to have our beautiful guest with us. Shakti Durga will join us right now. Om Shanti. I'm Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci, and we'll be right back.
Om Shanti.
Shanti, my friends. Well, I was just going literally into a moment of meditation, and thank God that Max and Friends played, because I almost spaced out for a minute. But welcome back, my dear friend, and your friend, friend to the show, friend to Max and Friends, Shakti Durga from Australia. Welcome back.
Namaste, Max. Lovely to be back, and Happy New Year to you and your listeners.
Namaste to you, and thank you. That Om Shanti was so beautiful. Literally, I was going into the meditation trance. So before we get into this wonderful book, Empowering Relationships, you just returned from India, from your guru, Sri Shakti Amma. So tell us about your beautiful time in India.
Indescribable is the best way to to say what it was, but so much bliss and so much love, and just when you think it couldn't get any better, something else would happen. And my guru is someone who believes that our job is to bring heaven to earth, and for that, what we need to do is merge with the divine, and you know, meditate or chant or whatever it is we do. But then bring that essence and bring that bliss and the peace and the joy back and live it and share it with everybody. And so I love it because it's so practical as well as mystical, you know. And I think that for me, my favorite thing is to have my head in mysticism and the beauty of the inner world and my feet on the ground, you know, so that we're, to me, the spiritual aspirant is someone who's really engaged in making the world a better place, you know? So, yeah, absolutely. It was just so inspiring absolutely to be there.
Now, here's the question I have for you, because I believe, and so many listeners who are tuning in tonight might have the question, is the guru really in me? Am I the guru? What do you say to that?
I say that guru is in everyone, and that having an external guru is like a catalyst that helps us turn up the volume control on inner guru. And so for me, when I sit with Amma, my capacity to perceive the divine within me becomes exponentially stronger. And then I'm able to share that with others so that they can start to see the divine in them, and that capacity gets more kind of reliable and can be held in more and more circumstances. So I feel, to me, that it's just important to have a living guide, because the guru is someone who loves you and who teaches you at a soul level. And they don't just teach you, you know, by talking like we are right now. My guru teaches me in my dreams and also in a deep sleep state, so that I wake up in the morning and I just know all these things I didn't know the day before, and I know it's guru because I can feel the shakti, I can feel the power in me that the guru's put there. So I don't think there's anything like it. I think it's a truly remarkable piece of grace to actually have a living guru. And through them, we learn to see the God within ourselves, and that's what it's all about.
Absolutely. It's a mirror image, a beautiful mirror image. Now, here we are. You know, we had such a wonderful time when you were here on Max and Friends the last time you visited, and now I received this fabulous book called Empowering Relationships. What motivated you to write literally what I'm calling, I love the book, and it's truly a guide to understanding one another, to understanding yourself, who am I, but also understanding how in a relationship we have power and how we are literally empowered peacemakers. So what was it that entered your spirit to say, Shakti, write this book, Empowering Relationships?
I guess there was a few different factors that wove around each other. One was my own mistakes that I made through ignorance, really, in my earlier life, because I got divorced twice on my way to learning how to have really fabulous, inspiring and empowering relationships. And so I thought, wow, you know, my journey has just been so amazing, physically, mentally, emotionally and spiritually, for me to reach a place where I really feel the opposite of how I used to feel. Because in the old days, I felt like when I got in a relationship, even though I was an intelligent, professional person, I always seemed to give my power away, and I always seemed to, you know, lose myself somehow in the relationship, and it just never worked for me.
What does it mean to give your power away?
Well, suddenly I was living the other person's life, and it didn't just happen once. It happened a few times where I so wanted to please them and I so wanted to make them happy that I guess I surrendered myself, not in a good way, because it was more to get their approval, if you see what I mean, and to get attention. Yeah. That I would do that. And I realized after a time that this was a really big mistake, and that I was looking externally to fill a void internally. And so what I did through my spirituality was I learned to fill the void within that was like an emotional void or an emotional set of needs that I had. And whilst ever I was trying to outsource the satisfaction of those needs to other people, it always ended up that it would become a codependent relationship, you know, and it just would get more and more out of control. And whilst it would sort of chug along okay if everything was going all right, if something started to go wrong, then it just would go out of control and be irretrievable. And I just, you know, I had the help of spiritual guides and mentors and gurus, and I just wanted to try and write down what had helped me in my journey. So everything in the book is a practical kind of tool to help you be honest in your relationships, to be authentic, to love more deeply than you ever have before, but with less neediness and more sense of freedom, more sense of peace, and to know that, you know, a lot of people, when they think of power, what they're really thinking of is power over, and that's not what I'm talking about at all. What I'm talking about is a sense of deep empowerment, which to me bubbles up from your soul. It's a spiritual quality, and it kind of means that you're able to utilize, you know, all the virtues, things like kindness, consideration, but also discipline and also tenacity and, you know, some of the more challenging things. And that, to me, relationships are actually a spiritual path. And I think that when we look at our relationships as, wow, this is a spiritual practice, then it's great to have some tools and techniques and objectives to know how to approach that as a spiritual practice. And what I've found is that, you know, there's thousands of people in Australia that have practiced the things that we teach, and you know, so many people have turned around relationships where really they were just about to split up, and you know, peace has come back into relationships where they had split up, but they'd stayed at war with each other for 10 years.
Oh yeah, you know, that's a great point, because I know there's someone listening tonight, because they have asked sent me an email earlier, and they were asking about, you know, she said, I'm in a marriage just to be. Hold on, let me read this exactly. I'm staying in my marriage for the children. I know it's a common American thing to do, but what do I do if the marriage I feel is over? Do I leave and hope that the children will be okay? Well, yeah. That's a loaded question. But let's stick to the I mean, I guess it's an international pattern when people, it's a pathology too. Staying in the marriage for the children. What do you say to that?
Well, it depends on the circumstance, as you said, but if the marriage is dead and there's, you know, no respect in the marriage and people are really at war and living on this, under the same roof, then I feel that that is actually quite damaging to the children. And I feel like it's setting them up for a template that this is what relationships are like.
Absolutely.
And so
it becomes a pattern of pathology.
Yeah, personally, yeah. I'm not a big fan of people staying in that situation. It doesn't necessarily mean that they need to get divorced. What it probably means is that a period of time out, you know, maybe a separation for a period, whilst each person has counselling or embarks upon spiritual training to see whether or not the relationship can be resurrected. And
absolutely.
If it can, that's fantastic. But what we say to our students here, and we have a growing school in America as well, and we're finding that the same issues, you know, are across the Pacific from us as well, is that we say when you entered into a marriage, it really was a commitment to love each other forever. And so whether the form of that love is as a married couple or whether or not the marriage actually completes somewhere along the way and then the form changes and it becomes a friendship. But what we say to our people is that we want to coach you and guide you into how you can become spiritually empowered to have peace even in a situation where up until now it's been a disaster zone. And that's what the training's about, Max. And it's you know, we
work on it's a beautiful training seminar, and the book is so empowering, not only because the title is Empowering Relationships, but because people are in a state where they really want to continue to love and not give up. Now, if you're joining me tonight, we're having a great conversation with Shakti Durga from the wonderful Shanti Missions in beautiful Australia, shantimission.org. The book we're talking about is Empowering Relationships. Do you believe in karmic relationships, Shakti Durga?
Definitely. And my belief is that we keep reincarnating time after time and that we're part of a soul family. And I think that our soul makes agreements before we get here with each other saying, oh, well, in this life, how about you be my husband and, you know, Joe, who I was married to 3 lives ago, he can be our son. And, you know, that it's like putting people in a play and we play roles in each other's life to sort of bring the karmic lessons that each other needs. And so it's something deep in our soul that calls forth these situations we find ourselves in. And I've found that some of the biggest souls sometimes come in with some of the biggest issues to sort out. And because they're strong enough to handle those big issues, even though they don't think they are, you know, and my advice is, you know, if you're not getting on so well with someone who's in your family, the best thing is to try and sort it out, because otherwise you'll just incarnate with them next life. And, you know, your ex that you don't get on with this life, it could end up being your mother in the next life. And who wants that?
You know what's so funny? I always tell people, don't be mad at your ex. Thank them, because what it is now you can move on and you can be with who you're supposed to be with. So don't hold anger towards them. Love them for letting you be free and letting you be with who you're supposed to be with, so you don't have to be with them again in another life.
Well, yeah. Now, and that's I don't really mean any disrespect to ex-partners. I'd love to see a category of beloved that is ex-husband or ex-wife, you know, that this person is held in esteem in our culture, you know, that we had a marriage and it completed, and that we're now able to move on to a different part of our life where new lessons await us and it's a new adventure. And, you know, my kids, I've got two children, and they grew up with my daughter was two when I broke up from her dad, and then she was 10 when my second marriage ended. And she's grown up to be the most well-adjusted, extraordinary young lady. And, you know, she's had a lot of spiritual tools and guidance and things all through that time. But she's now, she tells me that she's really grateful that she's had all the life experiences she has, because it's taught her how to be empowered at an early age. So I feel like it can be tough on the children, of course. But if the parents can engage with their own spirituality and bring virtue and good intention to bear, and that can be really tricky, as we all know, but the kids can actually end up with a family forest instead of a family tree, and they can end up with a whole lot of people who love them and who genuinely care about them, and they get to experience diverse life circumstances. You know, the two homes they're in or more are different, and they get to appreciate those differences. So I kind of get excited about the possibilities and the potential for all the different kinds of families that we now have. You know, we have gay families, we have, you know, these sort of really complex interwoven.
You know, what's fantastic here, and, you know, I'm in Florida right now, and last week we just had a great gentleman on over the week, last show, because last week gay marriage was, the ban was lifted. So it became, yeah, you know, a whole new journey in Florida. And, of course, in the States right now, they're going through so many hoops right now to legalize it. Yeah. But, you know, we've got to talk about intimacy, because I love your book, Empowering Relationships. If you're joining me right now, we thank you so much for tuning in to Max and Friends. And the book we're talking about is Empowering Relationships with Shakti Durga from Shanti Mission. And you write, in order to really understand intimacy, we're going to look at four phases of relating. And the four phases of relating are, you have four of them: the honeymoon phase, the individual differences phase, the conflict phase, and the separation or golden afterglow phase. So let's just get into that momentarily, and then we have some wonderful questions to really teach people how they can empower their relationship and how they can become empowered peacemakers. So what are these four phases? Tell us about them.
Well, the honeymoon phase is where, you know, you could be with Godzilla and you'd think that they were perfect, you know. It's the same thing where you can't see anyone's faults. All you can see is their beauty, and there's not much objectivity because we feel so infatuated. And it's a delicious phase of relating, and one that we should enjoy, and it's fantastic. But there's a couple of pitfalls in that period, and one is, as I was alluding to before, you know, if your beloved is into football but you're not, and you're suddenly spending three nights a week going to different games, and so your beloved assumes you love the football, whereas really you hate it, you know, so you can give your power away in that honeymoon phase because you're so enamored, you know. Oh, I'll do your washing, and you do it all the time because you want to make a good impression, but then that's where the boundary gets put, and that can be that can be a mistake 2 years later, you know, or 5 years later, because you're still doing the washing. You're still
doing
the cooking.
You're draining your energy. You're draining your energy.
Yes. Not really the truth. It's just what you got stuck with. So moving the boundaries later is tricky. But so I say to people in that honeymoon phase, enjoy it, but make sure you keep seeing your own friends. Make sure that you, you know, retain some of the life that you had before that you enjoyed, and don't just give up everything to be with this person who appears so perfect right this moment. So
that's a beautiful revelation for a lot of people listening. And you know, what's always so important, I believe, is to set up boundaries at the beginning. And it's not boundaries where, you know, you have to move every mountain, but set up just a respectful boundary so that people know where you're coming from. Because I believe that if you don't set up that boundary, you just allow things to create and escalate into something bigger, when if at the beginning you just said, listen, I will not be treated X, Y, and Z, and I won't treat you that way. But compromise is a beautiful thing.
Oh, absolutely. But I think that if we're not authentic at the beginning, then you know, we're giving people the wrong idea about who we are. And I think we do have to have some authenticity about ourselves. Anyway, that's the honeymoon. So moving on to the individual differences phase, and that's where the honeymoon's starting to kind of come to an end. And it might be 6 or 12 months into the relationship, maybe a year. And it's when you start to notice the things that you didn't notice before, like, you know, they do leave their undies on the floor and you don't like that, or they have these annoying habits that you kind of didn't notice before, and they want to do stuff you don't want to do, and now you're starting to notice the things that possibly you should have noticed a bit early, but we're all the same and we don't. So individual differences start coming up, and often this is cultural. So apart from the small examples I'm talking about, if you have, say, a Chinese person and a Mexican person who get married and they come from very different cultures, then it's like, well, which of these cultures are we going to live into as a couple, and how are we going to find compromise, and how are we going to, you know, it's just a tricky phase. So I feel that we can appreciate the differences we have with others, but it's possible that those differences are going to tip us into the third phase. But before we go into the third phase, there's an exercise we do with people where we get them to look at how their mother was in the relationship with their father and how their father was in the relationship with their mother. And we ask them a series of questions about that. And, you know, what can you learn? What did your mother think her role was in the family? What did she show you about being a woman? You know, and all these things that we learnt as little children, even if we don't agree with them, even if we really hated it, it's in us somewhere in our subconscious. It's kind of like we got programmed.
Yeah.
And so
it
in the individual
the pathology.
Yeah, that's right. And so we do a lot of work with people to help them through that so that they can understand the invisible dynamics that are actually driving them, and also pulling towards them people who show them these invisible dynamics and pull them to the front. So
now, let me ask you a quick question, because, you know, there's an epidemic going on, and they've done some really beautiful shows about it on Oprah Winfrey's network, the OWN network, called Fatherless Children. So fatherless daughters and motherless children, whether they were a single parent household. So what is it for those who grew up in a single parent household who don't know how a man should treat a woman or a woman should treat a man because they were never witness to it? What advice do you give to those grown-ups now who are like, I really don't know how to treat someone?
Yeah. What I'd say to them is find a mentor. Find someone of the gender that you missed out on who may be an older person than you, and hang out with them and learn about what that person's like, you know. So sometimes I think, you know, when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. So if we have an intention, I really want to find someone who can show me what it's like to be, you know, a beautiful woman or a beautiful man, that we actually can attract that to us, and we can find a way to have a respectful friendship with someone who can just demonstrate it to us. So that's one of the things that we can do.
That's beautiful, because if we don't, then we get into the conflict phase. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. So the conflict phase happens when, you know, we strike these differences, and we may never have expected to, and we haven't planned for it. We don't have a plan. We don't have a direction to go with this, and we don't know what to do, and we get scared, and we're both trying to control the situation. And so a conflict comes up. And then it's about what we do with the conflict. Personally, I feel that conflict is important to a healthy relationship, because it allows us to know exactly what the other person's doing. And that in order to get to, see, I think you can go through the conflict, and if you do it cleanly and deeply, and spiritually, you can end up in the honeymoon phase again. And this is why I call it the four phases of intimacy, that you can end up with more of a honeymoon than you had at the beginning, and it's deeper and more golden and more amazing. And that's how the intimacy comes into the relationship, because, you know, before we've shared as much as we felt was comfortable to share, and now we've gone into the kind of no man's land where as yet we haven't found love in that place. And so as we go into this conflict and we get some skills on how to do conflict, you know, with respect but still with authenticity and power, then what happens, we come out the other side and it's like, oh, my God, you know, I love you more than I ever have, and I'm so pleased that, you know, we've cleared the air on this in this area, and that we can bring love into that area as well now. You know, we've found a way forward. And for me, I often, and I often feel that the whole notion that spiritual people in the world are usually interested in consciousness, and you know, even way back, you know, I think it was Isaac Newton who said, or Einstein, sorry, who said, you know, you can't find the solution to a problem at the same level of consciousness that you created the problem. So what we help people do is expand their consciousness, because they might say, look, it's either this or it's that, and I don't like either option, you know, I'm stuck in this conflict, there's no way out. And we say there's always a way out, there's always a way to move forward, but sometimes we have to just let go of some things that are a bit sort of stuck in our egos and stuff that's bubbled up from childhood impressions of how things have to be. And as we sort of surrender a little bit and our consciousness expands through meditation, through yoga, through chanting, whatever our path is, and then we go, oh, my God, look at this. There's a whole thing I hadn't even thought that would be possible for us to move forward. And so that's how we encourage people, you know, and we help them to, you know, call their spirit back from this situation. And sometimes the problem that you started to get into conflict about is actually not a big thing. It's like who cleans up the kitchen or something becomes the conflict, you know. And it's not a massive thing. But by the time we're so lacking in skill on how to deal with conflict, instead of being a 1 or 2 out of 10 problem, it becomes a 12 out of 10 problem, because we've added all this fiery energy to it. And then it kind of seems like the problem is so massive, it's like the Empire State Building, and we're just this little person standing next to it who's totally overwhelmed by the size of the problem. And it's because the energy. So we teach people how to drain all that negative energy out of the situation through energetic healing techniques. And we help them to really come to the realization that they're this massive soul having a human experience. And this is just a problem that's like a classroom. It's like a classroom to help the soul to evolve. And that's why we say that relationships are a spiritual path.
Absolutely. So, now, what happens if we don't handle our differences or conflicts well?
What happens is either total or partial separation occurs. And when I say partial separation, it's like a hardening of the heart. And it's like intimacy starts to drain out of the relationship, and you end up just in conversational relating. You never talk about anything deep. You never talk about anything that's important, because you're too frightened, you know, about what might happen. And so everyone just keeps everything in this kind of holding pattern. But meanwhile, someone started to have an affair, or someone feels really dissatisfied in the relationship. They feel like, you know, where's the love? I can't feel it. So they're still together, but really energetically and spiritually they've separated already. And eventually, if there's no intervention, they're likely to separate at some stage.
You know what? We're going to take a quick break. If you're tuning in for the first time, I thank you for joining us on Max and Friends here on LA Talk Radio. We have a great music interlude right now. Om Ganga and Max and Friends. And when we're back, Shakti Durga is here to tell us about empowering our relationships.
Yeah.
Alternative Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. That was Om Ganga. We are here tonight talking about the book Empowering Relationships. Shakti Durga joins me. Now, a great question is, what does an empowered relationship look like?
Well, I think the perfect relationship is one where each person in the relationship can really perceive the divine in the other one and in themselves. And that there's the capacity to have the courage to really love each other, you know, and to have good communication, to have respect for each other, to give each other the freedom to do whatever they want to do, you know, that what they need to do in the world. And that I guess for me that's kind of what it's like. It's what it's like with my husband that I have now. So I had to make a lot of mistakes and do a lot of learning to get to a place where that's the kind of relationship I now have.
Now, how can we have better relationships? Is there a relationship between vulnerability, surrender, empowerment? But more importantly, how can we have better relationships?
Well, I think that one firstly needs to decide that it's possible. One needs to have the hope that there's got to be something better than this, you know, that I can be fulfilled, that I can bring my spirituality in a practical way to bear in this relationship, and that I'm capable of that. And I think sometimes people think, well, in order to have a really great relationship and feel empowered, my partner's got to change. And I think there's a lot of focus on what my partner's doing or what my partner's not doing, whereas in the spiritual training that we provide, we're really looking at, okay, well, I kind of am the author of my whole universe, and so how is it that I can discover within myself the sacred keys that will bring about a wondrous change in this relationship? So maybe my chakras might be all clogged up with rubbish from the past and I need to get that cleaned out. Or maybe my mind is very programmed with stuff from my childhood that I'm only half conscious of, or maybe totally unconscious of, so I need to get that out. And maybe I'm not living by the natural laws of the soul, you know. Maybe I'm too attached. Maybe I need to look at how to develop karmic grace. There's a whole stack of things that might go on there. And I feel like when we sort of perceive the world as a victim, we're always going to need someone to persecute us, and we're always going to feel powerless. And one of the biggest changes, I guess, that's come into my consciousness is when I was in my 20s and my teens and I was in relationships, I allowed myself to be a victim to other people's stuff, you know, and I always thought it was them. And as I've grown spiritually, I've realized, oh, my God, you know what, that was all a dance that my soul created so I could learn the stuff I know now. And without all that, I never would have evolved. I never would have had the impetus to learn and grow. And now, if I want to feel empowered, I stop blaming someone else, despite the fact that it looks in the physical world to be something they've done or something they've said. I then look within myself and go, that's fascinating. You know, how is this being created in my multidimensional landscape? And more importantly, what am I going to do with it now? What would love do? What would love do with this kind of fruit salad of a sort of smashed up whatever it is, you know? What do I do with this? And so that's where we can help and mentor people and bring their spirit to the front and show them all the exciting things that they can do about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, you said the word karmic grace. What define karmic grace for us?
Okay, well, karmic grace would be, imagine a car speeding down the street and it misses you by sort of 10 meters, and it was going to hit you and something stopped, you know, something moved you out of the way, something made you go left when you're going to go right, and you wouldn't have known that car was there, but it would have hit you and you would have been in serious trouble. Well, that's sort of karmic grace. It's just this invisible essence of fortune, I suppose, or of blessing or love that I believe is actually a real force in our lives, and that we can cultivate it. And the main ways that we cultivate it is by the way we give to others, the way we learn to forgive. Forgiving, I think, is a really big deal, and certainly it's a tool for having a more empowered relationship is to forgive. But it's a whole, there's a whole lot of teachings around that. And the other one is to serve other people, to make others happy, you know, and to get genuine delight in making other people happy without depleting yourself and without being a victim or a martyr. So these are things that help us develop karmic grace. But grace is kind of like the wind beneath our wings when we really need to fly, when we really want, you know, to make a change. Grace is what lets us do it. So it's kind of like love in action.
Absolutely. Well, it's a beautiful flow. It's a beautiful vibration. Now, what can we do if we're feeling unvalued, unloved? A lot of people are in relationships where they feel unloved, unappreciated. How do we take that energy and manifest love out of it?
Well, the first thing is to realize that the people around us are responding to subtle, unconscious signals that are coming out of us. And so the best way that I've ever learned how to deal with people disrespecting me or undervaluing me is to think, thank you for showing me that I'm actually undervaluing myself somewhere in my life. And then I go on a little voyage of discovery to try and find out where I'm undervaluing myself, where I'm actually disrespecting myself. And I work on that. And so I work on my inner landscape and particularly my mind to try and reprogram it in a way that I accept, respect, love and trust myself, you know. And I say that all the time if I'm in that situation, you know. And I use affirmations, I use visualization, all the usual tools that probably your listeners are very familiar with, but not focusing on the beloved, focusing on the self that, this is just a classroom. They're just showing me something. And this is the only way that my soul can talk to me is through the reflection of what's happening in my worldly relationship life. That's just the reflection that my soul's showing me something for me to learn. So I look at it that way. And in that way, I get re-empowered again.
All right. Well, we just have a great tweet right now. And the question is, I'm in a relationship with my girlfriend now for almost 2.5 months and haven't heard her say, I love you to me. Does that mean anything?
Well, it means there are some people in the world who will tell you they love you within 5 minutes of meeting you. And there are other people who come from families where you probably only tell them that you love them on the day you marry them, and that's supposed to do for the rest of your life, you know. So there's a lot of cultural overlay on the on that question. But for that person, for your listener to be re-empowered, what I would suggest is that they start affirming to themselves how lovable they are, and that I love me and it doesn't matter about her. So I love me. I really, really, really think I'm a lovable person, and to climb right into letting yourself have self-love. And I think some people think that's egoic, whereas I think it's a survival strategy. You know, I just think we need to know that we're loved, and that the most important person we need love from is actually the self. And so that's what I would advise your listener, is to focus on loving the self, and then he'll probably find that his girlfriend automatically offers some kind of show of affection that means real love.
Absolutely. I say look in the mirror and tell yourself I love you first, so that way others can know to say that to you. Hey, how can we build intimacy in relationships? I know your book talks about it.
Yeah. Well, using the kinds of tools I've talked about, but the main thing is in that intimacy cycle that we talked about earlier, Max, and to not get, not to sort of give your power away and lose your spirit in conflict and to deaden yourself. You deaden yourself at this place where, okay, you won and I've lost, or I've won and you've lost, and we're just going to be a bit dead now around that issue. We won't talk about it. You know, it's a no-go zone. It brings up problems every time we talk about it. I think you lose your intimacy there. And I think conversely that the way you bring more intimacy is being ready to share yourself and your heart more than you have before. And generally I feel when that happens that I feel a little vulnerable when I'm telling my partner something I've never told anyone, or, you know, I feel like I'm ready to share my feelings about a certain matter that we haven't talked about before. And I feel this, you know, and to that to me brings intimacy. even if the partner doesn't have to agree with you, but you're sharing your truth with an open heart, my feeling is that helps the connection and it helps intimacy build.
Absolutely. And the word itself, intimacy, means in yeah. to me, see. Into me, see. And I just think that that's such a beautiful revelation of that word. Now, we've got to plug some things before I have my last question for you. We have to wrap this up. But you're going on a U.S. seminar tour the end of January through February. You will be doing Empowering Relationships. The book we're talking about tonight here with my guest Shakti Durga is going to Denver, Colorado, January 31st. And then you'll be in Connecticut, February 21st. But your tour starts in Evergreen, Colorado, and then you're in Fairfield, Connecticut, and then San Diego, California, and then you're off to Hawaii. So for more information, go to Shakti, SHAKTIDURGA.com to get a full list, because really you're going to find Dimensions of Wealth is another wonderful seminar that's happening in Connecticut Saturday, February 21st. So for more information, we'll be tweeting it. Tweet me at Max Tucci and let me know if you have any questions for Shakti Durga. I'm going to put all the information up on Twitter after the show, so you'll be able to know. Also, go to shantimissionsamerica.org/events.html. I'll put that up on the show. The retreats and seminars are Path of Ease and Grace, and Shakti Durga will welcome you with a big hug wherever you are, whether it's Connecticut, Colorado, California, or Hawaii. Are you getting excited for this tour?
I can't wait. I just love being in America. It just feels like home to me. The people are so beautiful and friendly, and yeah, it's one of my favorite places.
Super. Now, you say that the energy field of relationship builds up between two people. What does this reveal?
Well, just about everything, actually, Max. So one of the things that my gurus have trained me to do is to be able to clairvoyantly, I suppose, perceive what's going on in the relationship between people. And so now I train people how to do that too. And you can see everything. You can see how they communicate. You can see whether they feel safe with each other. You can see whether they feel like they've got a sort of a sensual connection or not, whether the heart is really in the relationship, whether there's communication problems, whether or not they have a common vision for their future, whether they're heading in the right direction or not. There's just so much that the energy, because each person has an energy field. We know that, the aura and the chakras, we all know we've got those. But when we get married or we enter into an intimate relationship, those two auras kind of partially merge and form a third thing, like a Venn diagram, you know, like the two circles that merge into each other. And then this third thing kind of gets this life of its own, and it can be really messy. And if it gets messy, then energetic healing work on the relationship itself tends to remove all the old muck, all the old terrible things that you keep getting bound up in again and again, and it gives you a fresh start to be able to go, okay, I'm going to do it differently this time. I'm going to move forward and let go of all the old baggage. And so it's really powerful, and I love sharing that with people because the results are pretty much miraculous.
The results are miraculous, and so is our time, because it is up. We have to let you go, because that's just how the show goes. But Empowering Relationships is the book. I thank you all for tuning in tonight. Shakti Durga, my guest from Australia right now, from the beautiful Shanti Mission. Thank you so much for joining us. I bow to you. I say namaste. And I know that not only the show tonight, but your book is really the tool that will help people become beautiful, empowered peacemakers. So I thank you so much for joining me tonight, Shakti.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Max. Bye.
And everyone is going to see you on tour, hopefully. So Shakti Durga, thank you so much. I'm going to talk to you after the show. Well, everyone, it's time to say goodnight. I'm going to play a beautiful, beautiful poem from my guru, Majaya Sati Bhagavati, from the Kashi Ashram in Florida. On this note, I have to say I love you all for listening. Thank you for tuning in to Max and Friends. Have a wonderful week. Take life to the max. Good night and good karma.
Children play in my river. Sadhus stay by my river. Cities old by my river. Temples made of gold by my river. Cows stray all the day by my river. River, river, I am thirsty. River, river, I am yearning. I laugh with the children that swim in my river. And someday I will go back. Oh, my river, my mother. I must never forget you wherever I go. Oh, my mother, my gentle Gange, I yearn to play with the children in my river. Children, children everywhere, come play in my river. Children, children everywhere, watch the ash fall from my hair. This river shall never disappear. This river shall always be here. This river shall always be near. Ashes, ashes everywhere. This is a river of life and death. Who comes to her waters, do not despair. River, river, I am yearning. River, river, I am burning. And now, my river, it is your story being told. For I am the poet of the river. And no matter how old I become, I will always be wild by my river. Children play, sadhus stay. Cities old, temples gold, cows stray. Men die, widows cry all the while. One with the giver. My mother, the river. And let all the pain go, all the confusion go. Let it slip out of your hearts. And let the silence become the river. And let the silence become the river. Let the silence become the river.
LA Talk Radio.